There has been an apology from Detroit's emergency manager for those now infamous comments that were made in an interview with the Wall Street Journal. That's where Kevin Orr described Detroit in these words, and I quote, "For a long time, the city was dumb, lazy, happy, and rich." But now, speaking with WXYZ TV anchors and reporters, Orr offered up a mea culpa.
In my wildest dreams, I never would have thought that would have been interpreted as an insult. I also perhaps was not as in tune as I should have been to the fact that I said that the week before an election. Not particularly a smart thing to do. I was being dumb in that sense.
What effect will those words in the apology have on Orr's ability to work with Detroit leaders and citizens? And was there a point to what he was trying to say to the Wall Street Journal? Well, we're joined for that conversation by Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes. Good to have you on the program as always, Daniel.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, were you surprised and what was your reaction to the dumb, lazy, happy and rich comment?
Well, I was out of town on vacation when it broke, and I did read it and read the piece in the journal, and I think I took it differently than a lot of Detroiters did. And I think you have to subdivide this into two pieces. One is whether Kevin Orr likes to admit it or not, whatever he says publicly has political implications. And I think he's starting to – he's getting that baptism by fire and recognizing – sometimes after the fact that there are certain things he probably shouldn't say. But there are a lot of politicians that have to go through that process, and it is a learning process.
There is quite a curve, isn't there?
Yes, there is, particularly in this environment, particularly when he was someone who was not elected, he was appointed, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not at all surprised that people were up in arms about this. Having said that, I think if you look at the history of Detroit and where it was to where it is today, a lot of that's very defensible. He said, use the word dumb. We have an illiteracy rate in the city of Detroit of 49%. The graduation rate in the high schools is abysmal. That is not a secret. None of that is a secret. Rich. At one time, Detroit led the country in per capita income, and so did Michigan. It doesn't anymore. So you can go down. Happy is a state of mind. I can't get to that.
And you think about it, I don't know how happy Detroit has been since the 67 riots, honestly.
I think as things have deteriorated, increasing numbers of Detroiters are not happy. And the best evidence of that, Cynthia, is that it's lost a third of its population in the last 10 years. I think we've talked about this before. I don't think you would find another city anywhere in the industrialized world that has lost a third of its population, except for something like a Katrina-ravaged New Orleans in that time frame. And these are people that just said, we're out of here. What does that tell you? Does that signify that they were happy? I don't think so.
Can I ask about the lazy? We didn't touch on that. What do you think that was about?
Well, I don't know. That's probably more subjective, although I think if you talk to employers in the city of Detroit about absentee rates, for example, which they don't like to talk about because their union workforces don't like it to be shared, that's been a real problem. I know it's been a problem in the auto industry and in plants, not only in Southeast Michigan, but around the country, but particularly in Southeast Michigan. Now, they've gotten their arms around it certainly in the last 10-plus years with the help of the UAW. But absenteeism has been a problem as well.
But that is not just Detroiters. That's plants in the suburbs and around the nation. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, I think that's more of a subjective thing. But I don't think there's any question. Mm-hmm. But what one of the things that has brought both Detroit and the auto industry to their twin reckonings has been the fact that the past was a lot better than the present. And in the case of the autos, they controlled a lot bigger chunk of the market. There was a lot less competition. And then when they finally had to contend with it, they didn't contend with it very well. So it really has been a steady slide of these, both the city and this industry. And the industry has now come back out of it. And now the city is in the process of trying to come back out of it. But it has been many markers of decline.
Daniel, if, as you say, there's truth in Kevin Orr's words, if there's an essence of truth, why do you think there was such an explosion of public reaction from leaders and Detroiters who were offended by this?
Pull the lens back a little bit here to answer the question. There's a long history in Detroit of people here getting bent out of shape about things that outsiders say about their city or about their auto industry or about you name it. I mean, it goes on all the time. I mean, this is nothing new. And the fact that people would be offended by this doesn't surprise me. That doesn't mean that there isn't one or several grains of truth in what he's saying as well. I think we would all agree that it was probably impolitic. You know, one of my personal rules, in my family we call it Howe's Rule 104, is thou shalt not give thine enemies a club to beat me with. And that's what he did. I mean, he gave his critics a club to beat him with, and they did.
Yeah.
And you've got to be a little more astute about what you say publicly and how you say it and to whom you say it, because this is a very sensitive time for people. I think people, the fact that you don't have a lot of the street protests and demonstrations and everything that a lot of people predicted with the imposition of an emergency manager signifies to me that a lot of people are A, weary, and B, know that things got to change, and C, want things to change. So that being the case, is there any percentage in rubbing people's face in it? I think the answer to that is probably no.
It sounded to me like something that you'd hear maybe one lawyer say to another while they're having dinner after a case or something, not for the whole world to read.
Or you would get some New York investor or bondholder who would come in and comment about Detroit, and you hear that all the time as well.
Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, it's one thing for someone who is, you know, like that outside to pass judgment on Detroit. I find that wearying, frankly. It's another thing for someone in a position of authority to do this. But, you know, I was reminded of Alan Mulally at Ford when I heard this. And Alan Mulally, when he first came to Ford in 2006, one of his favorite things to tell people was, you realize this company's been going out of business for 25 years.
Hmm.
I mean, he would change the number. Sometimes he'd say 30 years. Sometimes he'd say 20 years. But essentially what he was saying was, you people here have screwed this thing up so bad for so long that this is in the situation we find ourselves in was inevitable. Now, he's not calling them dumb. He's not using that word, but he's certainly implying it. And the point is that people that are in leadership positions who come in from the outside to very difficult situations, I think oftentimes look at things like that.
Fresh eyes.
Right. And he would try to be less accusatory.
Mm.
But he would still be sending the message that, listen, the way you guys have been doing things here has led to this. And that's why I'm here. And that is why he was there. I mean, the same thing at General Motors. You know, you talked to Dan, last time I interviewed Dan Ackerson, he said, you know, he reminded me, he said, this company went bankrupt. He called it a nose plant. He said that was quite a nose plant. I mean, mm-hmm. You can't get away from the fact of what has happened to these companies and what has led to their rebirth. And it's difficult. And it's difficult for people to stomach. But, you know, what I saw is that auto industry was downward spiraling, where fewer and fewer people who were being the homers and just saying, you know, my company, right or wrong. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people recognized that the situation was very, very serious, including, I might add, the UAW. I mean, those guys had no illusions about how serious the situation was.
The apology that was Kevin Orr offered in speaking mm-hmm. at WXYZ TV, was it too late? Was it the right thing? Was it not enough?
Well, you know, I would say it may have been a little late, but I think he probably wanted to do it in a venue that it would get wide distribution.
Mm.
And that's a good way to do it at a television station, where they've got cameras rolling and the apology can be essentially unedited.
Sure.
And, you know, they can lay it out there and do it. I mean, you could argue it's a little bit late. Whatever you think of the truth or the grains of truth in what he said, I think he had to do it. I don't think he had much of a choice because he had to try and take the issue off the table. Now, people who do not support him and do not support the idea of an emergency manager are not going to be mollified. And it's just going to be one more reason why they don't like the guy or the concept. But, you know, the fact that he said it and the fact that he apologized or didn't apologize doesn't change the challenge that the city faces. And I think that's really, I mean, let's keep our eyes on the prize here, folks. What really needs to, what is before them is a very difficult restructuring challenge. And this is kind of a rhetorical thing that probably creates some noise. And I don't think he's going to totally mute it by apologizing, but essentially what he's doing is saying, I got to move on here, and we all need to move on.
Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes, who joins us each Thursday. Thanks so much for your time, Daniel.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.